Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Today's episode is brought to you with the welcome support of Maltbean Creek, UK's leading Greek delicatessen, supplier and distributor of premium Greek produce. Be it wine, herbs, cheeses or olive oil, from all over the wild corners of Greece, and working directly with small artisan producers. If you want to try some amazing traditional meats from Greece, preserved meats, why don't you get some Vavourakis organic smoked tsiklino from Maltbean Creek? So this is preserved and smoked pork in olive oil, and they follow a traditional Cretan recipe for it, which is really old. And the meat is smoked using olive wood, and it's flavored with pepper and cumin. So this is kind of, this is the kind of meat and the kind of preservation techniques that go a long, long way to the past. And it has some relation to our episode today. Or you can try the organic Cretan sausages with cumin and vinegar. Again, another old Cretan recipe with roots to the Byzantine Empire. Whatever you need, Maltbean Creek has you covered. You can shop online and have the exquisite goods delivered to your doorstep across the UK, or you can visit the shop at Arch 17 Apollo Business Park, Lucy Way, SE16 4ET, Bermondsey, London. Maltbean Creek, the one-stop shop for your Greek fix. And, of course, for all you dear listeners, Maltbean Creek has an amazing discount of 15% off your next purchase. So go online, go to the website and type maltbeangreek.com/delicious, and you get 15% discount at the checkout. Hello! Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to another edition of our Archaeogastronomical Adventures. My name is Thomas Dinas, and this is the Delicious Legacy Podcast. Welcome to this exciting new episode. And yeah, I'm very excited about this episode because it's all about the perhaps the earliest survived fragments in Greek of cookbooks, of ancient cookbooks. And this was all found in what is now Egypt, of course, and what was back then Egypt too. But yeah, these fragments span a period from 300 before Common Era until about 200-300 AD, so a period of 500 years or so. It's terribly exciting because just only a few bits of instructions, and you see some ingredients and some herbs and spices, and so tempting to think about what could have been a whole book of these ancient recipes. There was loads of famous and renowned ancient chefs who wrote cookbooks, which they were called Obsartitikon. That's the the name for the cookbooks in ancient Greek. Many of them wrote cookbooks, but unfortunately we have none surviving to our age, which is a shame. But yeah, these tiny little pieces of fragments found in rubbish heaps in Greek Roman Egypt, it's just all we have. And yeah, I've cooked some of the recipes from these fragments. So I thought I'll share it today with you, the story of these fragments and some of the recipes. So enjoy. Imagine discovering an entire library of long-lost classics. A poem from Sappho, the ancient Greek poetess, whose lines haven't been seen by human eyes since the fall of Rome. Imagine finding the only comedy of Sophocles. Plays by Euripides, Pindar's Paeans, St. Matthew's earliest gospel, New Testament Apocrypha. Where in God's name is this buried and amazing Library of Alexandria? Hundred miles south of Cairo, Fayum town, at an ancient rubbish dump, 124 years ago, Bernard Pine Grenfell and Arthur Sarridge Hunt, scholars, professors, and more importantly, papyrologists, made an extraordinary discovery that will excite, tantalize, and intrigue the archaeological world for the next century and still be part of a wider study today. This seemingly abandoned desert spot, near a small and insignificant Egyptian village back then, for a period of 1,000 years, flourished as an important Hellenistic Egyptian city. Perhaps some think that it was the third largest in Egypt as the Greek influence waned and the world was turning into the Roman sphere of influence. This city was called Oxyrhynchus, which translates as the city of the sharp-nosed fish. And 2,000 years ago, it was on canals leading directly to the River Nile, which, as today, it was the lifeline of all Egypt's inhabitants. The Oxyrhynchus papyri are a group of manuscripts discovered during the late 19th and early 20th century, near Oxyrhynchus in Egypt. For over a millennium, the inhabitants of the city would throw away their rubbish in a number of sites in the desert beyond the city limits. Amongst these items were texts written on papyri that the people of Oxyrhynchus no longer wanted. And of course, amongst these texts, it's a great deal of things that we find interesting about the lives of people back then and how was their everyday existence, in a sense. So on January 11th, 1897, a low mound was being dug when a piece of papyrus with unknown logia, which is sayings of Jesus, was brought to the surface. And this would be later determined that is part of the apocryphal Gospel of Thomas. Next, it was a leaf from the Gospel of Matthew. And then, even more pieces of papyri. In the first 3 months of the excavations, the men found enough papyri to fill 280 boxes. And as you can imagine, it was these literary discoveries that initially excited Grenfell and Hunt and their contemporaries in the late 19th century. I mean, people were amazed to find unknown works from poets and writers from the ancient world, as well as parts of the Bible. It was really amazing. But subsequent scholars and generation of scholars have come to value even more the everyday material about the Greek and Byzantine Egypt, because these rubbish dumps in Oxyrhynchus contained a time capsule of a very special kind. As Pompey preserves a snapshot, a frozen frame of Roman life, as it was on one catastrophic day, the buildings and the bodies of those who lived there. The Oxyrhynchus papyri offers the converse, not bodies or buildings, but a paper trail of a whole culture. Who were these amazing dudes? And what made them dig in these spots in the desert? Bernard Pine Grefnell was born in 1869, and he was a pioneering papyrologist, specializing in the translation of ancient Egyptian writing systems. He trained under another legendary professor back then, called William Petrie, and worked closely, as we said earlier on, with Arthur Hunt to establish the field of translation of ancient papyrus. So they jointly led archaeological expeditions to recover papyri, including that expedition in Oxyrhynchus in Middle Egypt, at the site of Fayum. And they did it on behalf of the Greco-Roman branch of the Egypt Exploration Society. Arthur Hunt was born in 1871. But this site in the middle of nowhere, in a sense, when Napoleon invaded Egypt, because let's face it, he invaded, he didn't arrive to liberate Egyptians or for any other reason. He might like Egypt and he thought it's an interesting place, but let's be honest, he wasn't there to admire the antiquities. The French and Napoleon were there to be the occupiers and loot, as everybody else did. But anyway, when Napoleon arrived in Egypt in 1798, one of his artists called Denon, who was following the Napoleonic survey of Egypt, he published a lithograph of Fayum, that city. And this lithograph shows little more than a few mounds, a single Roman column, the dome of a mosque, and some palm trees. Really not exactly a site that the early archaeologists and Egyptologists would be likely interested to excavate. But it was there. There was a significant city, and the happy accident of the dry climate and the pile of ancient rubbish that gave a rare glimpse of the ancient Greco-Roman Egyptian's life. There's a portion of a papyrus roll from the 3rd or 4th century of our common era that contains one of the few surviving cookbooks in Greek from antiquity, featuring recipes for fish soup, pickled meat, lentil porridge, sprouts with honey, liver skewers, calamus sauce, lavage and cumin sauce, amongst other bits and bobs. Interpreting the recipe for the salt meat stew, which is the one I did most times from these fragments, interpreting it in our way, basically it says salt meat stew, salt meat or slice of gammon, or fresh meat similarly. Salt meats are first boiled by themselves to remove saltiness. Then all goes into a casserole. 4 parts wine, 2 parts must, 1 part vinegar, coriander seed, thyme, anise, fennel, all roasted and put at the beginning. Simmer. When half done, add honey and a bit of cumin. Some also add pepper. And putting the stew into a warm serving vessel, add bits of warm bread. It is somehow very fitting that papyrus survived only in Egypt because of the dry climate. Because papyrus was native to Egypt as a plant. And from there, the earliest moments of writing began, of humankind's writing. So it's very brilliant for me to think of that, because Greeks wrote in papyri, Romans wrote in papyri. There were probably millions of them all around Asia Minor and mainland Greece, but almost nothing survives from that because of the climate. And yet the only ones that survive are in Egypt. Something that whole connection of the climate and the material and the manage to come to our age. Of course, only insights that they haven't been looted or burned or conquered. Yeah, somehow this makes it even more special that it's found in Egypt. Because I often think the archaeologists of the future, so in 2,000 years' time or something, what will they know of our writings and of our age? What will they find? If all our writings are digital, almost all our knowledge is online and on hard drives. This digital data won't last 100 years, let alone 2,000 years in the future. There will be nothing left from our age for the future generations to know. It will be even worse than papyri, to be honest, which makes it... it does really drills a point here about how ephemeral is all our knowledge. And yeah, you don't need looting or burning to destroy the evidence of past civilizations. Anyway, back to our recipes. It's worth mentioning here what papyrus is and what made it so important to ancients, but also important for us too, learning about their lives and history now. Papyrus, from which we get the modern word paper, is a writing material made from the papyrus plant, a reed which grows in the marshy areas around the Nile River. Papyrus was used as a writing material as early as 3000 BC and continued to be used to some extent until around 1100 AD. Papyrus is the Greek name for the plant and may come from the Egyptian word papuro, also given as papera, meaning the royal or that of the pharaoh, because the central government had control of papyrus processing as they owned the land and later oversaw the farms the plant grew on. The ancient Egyptians called the plant jet or jufi or waj, forms of the concept of freshness. Waj further denotes lushness, flourishing, greenness. Once papyrus was cut, harvested and processed into rolls, it was called gemma, which may mean clean or open in reference to the fresh writing surface. Although it was produced exclusively in Egypt, where the papyrus plant grew, papyrus, the writing material, was exported throughout the classical world, and it was the most popular writing material for the ancient Greeks and Romans. Papyrus sheets are made by arranging two layers of papyrus, one on top of the other, at right angles. The layers are then pressed together, and the gum, released by the breakdown of the plant cellular structure, acts as a glue which bonds the sheet together. In ancient times, several sheets of papyrus were joined end-to-end to form a roll. These rolls could be 100 feet long or more in length and were the common form of papyrus in the ancient world. The ancient Library of Alexandria was home to thousands of papyrus rolls containing the literary works of ancient authors.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Grefnell describes the dig. The workmen are divided into groups of four or six, half men, half boys, and in the beginning are arranged in a line along the bottom of one side of the mound, each group having a space 2 meters broad and about 3 meters long assigned to it. At Oxyrhynchus, the level at which damp has destroyed all papyrus is in the flat ground within a few inches of the surface, and in a mound, this damp level tends to rise somewhat, though, of course, not nearly as quickly as the mound rises itself. When one trench has been dug down to the damp level, one proceeds to excavate another immediately above it and throw the earth into the trench which has been finished, and so on right through the mound until one reaches the crest, when one begins again from the other side. Fortunately, for modern scholars and curious people like you, the dry climate of Egypt has preserved thousands of fragments of ancient papyrus. These fragments form the basis of the field of papyrology, the study of ancient papyrus. Papyrus texts offer scholars new literary sources as well as documents such as letters, government records, which give much insight into the life of ancient Egypt. A testament, in some ways, of the strength and endurance of papyrus rolls in the Egyptian soil is a discovery by Pierre Tallet a little more than a decade ago in a remote part of the Egyptian desert, a few miles inland from the Red Sea, far away from any city, ancient or modern, of a stunning discovery. A set of 30 caves honeycombed into limestone hills, but sealed up and hidden from view for millennia. The caves had served as a kind of boat storage depot during the 4th dynasty of the Old Kingdom, about 4,600 years ago. Then, in 2013, Tallet came upon something quite unexpected. Entire rolls of papyrus, some a few feet long and still relatively intact, written in hieroglyphics as well as hieratic, the cursive script the ancient Egyptians used for everyday communication. Tallet realized that he was dealing with the oldest known papyri in the world. Now this is where it gets really exciting. The papyri were written by men who participated in the building of the Great Pyramid, the tomb of the pharaoh Khufu, the first and largest of the three colossal pyramids at Giza, just outside of modern Cairo. Among the papyri was the journal of a previously unknown official named Merer, who led a crew of some 200 men that traveled from one end of Egypt to the other, picking up and delivering goods of one kind or another. Merer mentions stopping at Tura, a town along the Nile famous for its limestone quarry, filling his boats with stone and taking it up the Nile to Giza. In fact, Merer mentions reporting to the noble Ankhaf, who was known to be the half-brother of the pharaoh Khufu, and now, for the first time, was definitely identified as overseeing some of the construction of the Great Pyramid. And since the pharaohs used the Tura limestone for the pyramid's outer casing, and Merer's journal chronicles the last known year of Khufu's reign, The entries provide a never-before-seen snapshot of the ancients putting finishing touches on the Great Pyramid. Isn't it this fascinating? The fragile papyrus got burned, looted, wet and moldy elsewhere in Europe and in the world, but survived to Egypt's dry climate and reached us from 4,500 years ago. Papyrus eventually gave way to parchment and later paper. The large plantations in Egypt, which used to cultivate high-grade papyrus for manufacture, disappeared, and wild papyrus also began to disappear as the climate of Egypt slowly changed. And with this, the art of papyrus making remained dead for 1,000 years. During the 20th century, when more and more papyrus texts came to light, scholars began to investigate how ancient papyrus manufacturing occurred. Several variations of the basic scheme, which is outlined in Pliny's Natural History, were proposed and tested, but none has produced a writing material which is of the quality of the ancient papyrus. 2,000 years ago, papyrus making was a booming industry, and papyrus was made by highly skilled craftsmen, working with a specially cultivated strain of papyrus that was bred to produce a high-quality writing material. Today, it is made from the wild strains of the plant, and the manufacturing process is carried out on a small scale by the few specialists who choose to make it. From the ancient rubbish dumps of Oxyrrhynchus, a lot of interesting texts and correspondence survived, which includes the following. An account, probably rendered by an official to his superior, of expenses connected to the dispatch of several boatloads of grain by river to Alexandria. So the papyrus reads. Account. For the vessel of Triadelphus, 3,400 artabai of wheat at 21 drachma. 712 drachma, to the same at 4 drachma per 1,000, 12 drachma, carriage of 171 artabai of wheat transported. The next bit is missing. Then, the drying place at 4 drachma per 100, 6 drachma, price of a jar of wine, sent to the assistants and soldiers, 8 drachma, 1 obol, to the elders of office for the wages of 11 workmen employed in lading. 6 drachmas, 2 obols. To Apulkis, guard of the granary, as his salary. To be 18 drachmas more. Total expenditure, 762 drachmas, 3 obols, of which, text missing. For the vessel of Ilorion, son of Ammonius, 1,500 artabai, and for the vessel of Paphsiris, son of Apollonius, 500 artabai. Total 2,000 artabai at 21 drachmas. Payment to Orion, pilot, the sum given 8 drachmas. Price of a jar, sent to assistants and soldiers, 8 drachmas, 1 obol. Price of 2 more jars, sent to sailors, 16 drachmas, 2 obols. Price of the vegetables for the same, without bread, 4 obols. To the elders of office, for the wages of 7 workmen employed in lading, 4 drachmas. To 1 workman assisting beyond, and embarking for 3 days, 5 drachmas. Total expenditure, 466 drachmas. Sum of the whole expenditure, 1,228 drachmas, 3 obols. Another papyri text reads a letter to a woman called Athenarus, announcing the dispatch of oil and fruit. The writer, whose name is lost, seems to have occupied some official position, for he mentions that he was about to accompany the prefect to Coptos. First of all, I pray for your health. Please receive, through Kedon, for Dionysius, 4 cotyli of unguent and a basket of dessert containing 100 figs, 100 nuts, and half a chus, which is a squat, rounded form of inohoi, which means wine pourer, of oil, of which you will give 4 cotyli to the said Dionysius and keep 2 cotyli for yourself. Greet your mother and Matris and her children and all who love you. I am going to Koptos with the prefect. Addressed to the house of Pausanias, ex-clerk of the city, for Athenarus, daughter of Kerdon. Another recipe from the book, from the papyri, is liver oxyrhynchus. Cut up good liver, marinate it in oil with salt, coriander, thyme, silphium, opos, vinegar. Grill it on a spit at high temperature. Serve. Grefnell writes, in the winter of 1898-99, we obtained permission to excavate in the desert at the northwest corner of Fayum, between Gebala and the southwest end of the Birket al-Kurun, this tract of flat desert, in which several sites are situated, was for the most part irrigated in Ptolemaic and Roman times, and remains of the old canals are clearly traceable. Here, as on the east side of Fayum, the margin of cultivation receded in the 4th century, and the outlying villages were abandoned. Now, however, the reclamation is proceeding rapidly, under the easy terms offered by the Egyptian government to those who are willing to undertake the construction of the necessary canals. The most promising site in our concession was the Maintenance Palace, which in 1898 was on the edge of the desert, and we began work on December the 9th. So this is another letter of someone called Philometor. Letter from a farmer of the beer tax at Theadelphia to a company of fish salters, directing them to support a certain Petesis who had paid his tax for making beer. Philometor Ithus, farmer of the beer tax at Theadelphia for the 12th year, to Psais and partners, fish salters, greeting. Please support Petesis, an inhabitant of Archelais. I have received the tax due from him and have no claim against him. Farewell, the 12th year of Choyak. There's a quite lovely letter from the 3rd century CE from Diogenes to Alexandros. Diogenes to Alexandros, her brother, greetings. As you instructed Tamois about a house for us to move into, we found one which we shall let go before we move over to Agathinos. The house is by Ision, next to the house of Claudius. We are moving there in Famenoth. I want you to know that I received from Botos 120 drachmas. I send you, text missing, of purple dye by Sarapiakos. The letter which you forwarded to me to deliver to Bolfios, I have delivered. Many greetings to little Theon. 8 toys have been brought for him by the woman who you told me to greet, and I have forwarded this to you. Address to Aurelius Alexandros, to Bolfios. So this is quite an interesting one because it's information about house hunting, news and greetings, very, very human, very similar to our age. Someone amongst all these scraps of papyri, there were some that when translated, the archaeologists found, the papyrologists found out that they were parts of ancient cookbooks or recipes that people wrote. And there is one on the preparation of a type of fish called tenia. And basically it tells you to clean it and wash it and then cut in pieces and covered with cheese and oil. That's from a recipe from Mythaikos in his cookbook. So Mythaikos, supposed to be an ancient, famous ancient chef. From Glafkos, the locker, there's another recipe which basically has meat, and it's a mixture with silphium and honey or and honey and vinegar and milk and lots of fragrant herbs, as it says on the text. Then there's another recipe called Mima from Epenetos, another ancient author, chef, cook, which is with lots of small cut meat, again with cheese, silphium, cumin, thyme, fresh thyme, dried thyme, coriander, vinegar, and so on. So yeah, this recipe from Epenetos called Mima, which you make from any sacrificed mammal or bird. And basically, it instructs you to cut the meat in small pieces with some intestine, and you mix them with the vinegar, grilled cheese, silphium, cumin, fresh cumin and dried cumin, fresh thyme and dried thyme, savory, fresh coriander and coriander seeds, and fried onion. Also, you can put, it tells you, you can put honey or raisins and some seeds of the sour pomegranate. And then you serve it as your dinner. And then here we also find a recipe from Pollux, which doesn't give us the source where Pollux finds this recipe from, but it's that recipe for Threon, which I remember in the previous episode about the Yorkshire puddings. It was a very early type of pudding from ancient Greece. There's another recipe from Artemidoros, again doesn't give us the source of this recipe, for a particularly good variety of a dish called Matis. So this is a dish made from birds, and it's something like a sausage, Macedonian sausage, and which is called Matia. It has lots of herbs, and you can eat it cold. Basically, the recipe instructs you to kill the bird and let it mature for a day. It says a day old. Use some stale up bread, and then you season it, and then you mix the meats of the bird with the greens. There's a recipe for lentil stew. Carefully mash the lentil in the bird meat stock and boil this in wine, water, anise seeds, caraway seeds, dried dill, but cook the lentil specially, grate onions with oil and vinegar. Let the sprouts of vines come to light. After you washed and rubbed, put mustard and honey on it, then dip. Cut up a nice liver and dress it with oil, with salt, coriander, thyme, fig juice, vinegar, and put it on a skewer. Roast them hot and serve. Carefully prepare loins and meats and fry them in salt, coriander, fig juice, but keep the hot broth, vinegar and oil in a saucepan, to 1 part sweet wine, to 2 parts a little salt. When the mixture boils, throw in tips of oregano. Mithaikos was one of the oldest known authors of cookbooks and gave us a recipe for the preparation of a type of fish called tenia, which shows that the cookbook was intended for practical use. It was a Sicilian cuisine that Mithaikos represented, and as such, his dialect was Dorian, probably from a Doric colony in Sicily. From these amazing fragments of papyrus, from this incredible little tantalizing evidence of recipes, I've made some of them, and the one that I made the most, and it was the most successful, was the dish with a cured, salted, smoked ham, pork, basically. There was a lot of salted ham and cured pork back then. It was of course the main way of keeping something lasting longer, especially down in hot Egypt without refrigeration. Yeah, but I made it a few times, and I made it sometimes with salted gammon, which I boiled obviously, but mainly I did it as a smoked recipe basically. So for me, the idea was that I slowly smoked a pork shoulder or something similar in the barbecue. So I kind of follow the techniques for slow smoking that you use in modern, the pulled pork type of thing that we do from the American US barbecues. So I did it in a similar, way, but using ancient ingredients. So for me, it was something like, I smoked it for 4 hours. I brined it firstly for 24 hours. Then the next day I smoked it over some oak wood for 4 hours. Then I covered it with all this seasoning and herbs and spices. So thyme, aniseed, cumin, black pepper, oregano, and so on. And I made the sauce like a barbecue sauce, but an ancient barbecue sauce. So I used fresh white grapes, which I blended them and made the grape juice, a must. And I boiled that with honey, white wine vinegar, lots of black pepper, and I let it, become nice, thick and sticky. And then I was covering the pork while I was cooking with this sauce. And yeah, it works really well. It's very tasty, and it feels like an ancient variation of the smoked US style barbecue. So yeah, that's it for today's episode. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the discovery of ancient recipes in the most unusual of places, in an ancient rubbish dump. And thanks for joining me. See you next time. Thank you so much for listening. This was the Delicious Legacy Podcast, and I'm Thomas Dinas. Please subscribe to Patreon so you get a wealth of information, a wealth of exclusive writing and material, such as recipes and musings by me. And also you get the podcast earlier and, most importantly, ad-free. Finally, I would like to add that I'm doing some videos, some ancient recipe videos for you guys, and this will be posted exclusively to my Patreon backers. So if you want to have some videos, if you want to see some videos and what they're going to be about, check my YouTube channel, The Delicious Legacy, and you'll find something there as a small taster for what to expect. Thank you and good night. Have a lovely week, and see you at the next episode.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.